Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 15 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Greater Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 10th of April, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret and Julie. And in the news this week, the council faces a large damp and mould problem. Electric cars charging wires are on the agenda. And the town's MP is in another row over potholes. Well, last week, listeners who normally get Grapevine in the post didn't, because of Easter. And so for those people, you'll find last week's Grapevine follows this week's, that is, if you wish to hear what you missed. Right, news is coming shortly, but first, it's the birthdays. And we've got two this week, so many happy returns go out to Joan Arben for Wednesday and to Christo Papadopoulou for next Friday. Have a great time, both of you. In this week's Grapevine Extra, we have Margaret reminiscing over bike rides and Julie bemoaning political correctness in bringing up children. That's at the end of the recording after we've given you all the local news, the first part of which is upon us with Margaret and Julie.
Hello everyone, it's Julie and Margaret here. Sadly, we haven't got Dusty with us today. She's been quite poorly, but she wants you to all know that she'll be back with you soon, and she sends you her love, and I'm sure you will all send your love back to her. Beautiful day here. We've just been for a little walk around her garden, so that was the last thing she said to me before I came away. Don't forget to give them all my love. My first news item is about Pokemon Trading Card Shop opens. The opening of a new trading card shop means locals will be one step closer to catching them all. Rare Rips TGC, based on Morton Pito Road in Great Yarmouth, has officially opened its doors and is specialising in the Japanese trading card game Pokemon. A spokesman for the shop said there had been a queue of 30 to 50 people waiting outside, eager to get in. The shop didn't have one quiet moment, with adults and children being able to enjoy their hobby. The shop is run by best friends Aaron and James, who have known each other for almost 30 years. The shop, which has amassed more than 1,000 followers on the social media platform TikTok, sells cards, but also acts as a place for collectors to come in and trade existing cards for ones that they need. The shop sells vintage packs as well as modern-day packets of cards. Well, there you all know where to go.
So Robert Lowe has been banned from Freedom of Information website. The local MP has been blocked from making Freedom of Information requests via a popular website after submitting more than 1,000 submissions to public bodies. Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth and leader of the newly formed Restore Britain party, had frequently used What Do They Know to ask for information from government departments and agencies. Among the inquiries made by the MP include diversity and equality hiring practices, grooming gang investigations, and universal credit payments to refugees. The independent website, which allows members of the public to submit and track requests, suspended Mr. Lowe's account this week. The site ruled that he'd used it to send general messages to public authorities or for personal messages to public organisations rather than straightforward information requests. Mr. Lowe hit back at the decision, calling it an act of censorship. Sadly, our access has been restricted, which I do not believe is in the spirit of transparency, he said. Our teams have uncovered huge scandals through FOL and investigation work. This censorship will not stop us from continuing those efforts. The MP added that Restore Britain was the only political party first correctly identifying the issues, but more importantly, outlining how to solve them. What a novel approach that is. A spokesman for What Do They Know Now confirmed the ban, but declined to comment further.
Almost one in 13 social homes owned by Great Yarmouth Borough Council has damp and mould problems, new figures show. Data released shows that 462 of its 5,802 homes were recorded to having damp and mould damage over the past financial year. The authority is one of the last in the country to retain control over its housing stock, with all other Norfolk councils except Norwich City Council having transferred the major ownership to social housing providers. Rupert Lowe, Yarmouth's MP, has described the figures as appalling and said poor housing quality was a frequent topic of casework in his constituency. The standard of housing in Great Yarmouth is appalling and it's a key factor in the amount of casework we are dealing with, he said. Foreign nationals should not be entitled to social housing in Great Yarmouth or anywhere else. Scant resources should be focused on providing decent quality housing for local families. The issue of mould in homes has risen in prominence in recent years. It can lead to severe health consequences for tenants, including respiratory illnesses, infections, allergies, and sadly even death. The rate of mould in Yarmouth social homes, roughly 8%, is above the average for rates across England, which is around 7%. It is also significantly higher than the 5% average across all homes in the country. The council, which revealed the figures following a Freedom of Information request, said data was not available for previous years. A spokesman said the authority is firmly committed to addressing damp and mould in the district. He said it carried out 593 home surveys as residents request, completing follow-up works at 489 properties. However, he acknowledged there was still some way to go and that additional and sustained government funding is essential. Great Yarmouth Borough Council manages a proportion of social housing that is significantly higher than many comparable local authorities, he said. This reflects both the scale of local need and the council's long-standing role as a major provider of affordable homes in the area. The council also pointed to the ageing nature of many of the properties. Much of the housing stock dates back decades, and while it continues to provide essential accommodation for thousands of people, the age and condition of some properties present ongoing challenges, particularly in relation to issues such as damp and mould. Data also revealed that the councils have struggled to respond quickly to mould in previous years. Between 2023-24 to 2024-25, the average time to respond to a first-stage complaint rose from 14 days to nearly 26, and in nearly a quarter of cases were not receiving a response on time. Figures from the last financial year showed some improvement, with average response times falling back to around 22 days, though 4 of 15 complaints were still not being answered by the deadline. Trevor Wainwright, leader of the opposition Labour group at the council, said, We, as a council, are committed to working with residents on a proactive approach to damp and mould, with early intervention and improved monitoring and preventative maintenance. We have adequate budgets in place to deal with these issues, but with the age of much of our housing stock dating back to the 1960s, this sometimes presents problems. But we are totally focused on working with residents where problems of damp and mould exist.
Part of the A47 is closed for emergency repairs. National Highways has said that the southbound carriageway is blocked between the Station Road roundabout and the Rackham's Corner roundabout near Hopton. This is due to a damaged drain cover. The problem was flagged in the early hours of Wednesday when highways contractors spotted it while carrying out overnight roadworks in one lane. They reported it to BT Openreach. A BT engineer came out to assess the damage and said that a full road closure would need to be put in place. The road was fully closed at around 3 a.m. and a spokesman for the body said that there was no current estimated time for reopening. Traffic was being diverted via local routes.
A Norfolk cafe and restaurant has completed a £160,000 project to transform a boat shed into an exhibition space and a gift shop. The Waterside has officially unveiled a new exhibition space and gift shop on the end of Rollesby Broad. Lovely place. The owners have created an immersive exhibition where people can learn about the history of the Broads and also buy souvenirs. Paige Hunter, head of the marketing at the Waterside, said the owners had the space to turn it into an exhibition and encourage more people to visit us. It is an audio-visual exhibition and there are 10 screens relating to the Broads. There are videos about how the Broads have changed, the wildlife and restoration of the Broads. We want to show off the history of the Broads. It comes after the owners secured an £80,000 grant from Great Yarmouth Borough Council via the Rural England Prosperity Fund for the project. The owners have also spent approximately £80,000 on the venture, which starts taking shape in early 2025. New internal partitioning, electrics, flooring, shelving, doors and windows overlooking Rollesby Broad have been installed in a complete transformation of the former boat shed. In the exhibition, each customer will receive an audio device and be able to watch archive footage of the Broads from the East Anglian Film Archive. A new gift shop has also opened, offering a selection of gifts, artwork, homewares and souvenirs inspired by the Broads and Norfolk's natural beauty. In addition, the site will be introducing live craft demonstrations in the shop, in which visitors will be able to watch a range of crafters weaving their magic. Miss Hunter said, "The idea is we invite local crafters to come in and they can have a space for 2 or 3 hours. They can then show off their skills, and we are hoping to arrange something each Saturday. We want to encourage as many art and craft people as possible, and there are so many talented people in Norfolk."
Allowing electric car owners to dig permanent pavement channels to charge their vehicles could lead to neighbours clashing in the street, a senior councillor has warned. Some councils have experimented with allowing channels to be created so cables can run from homes without driveways. A year ago, Green County Councillor Paul Neal urged Norfolk County Council to consider introducing them, and he was told the authority was looking into the results in other areas. At a full council meeting on Tuesday, March the 24th, Mr. Neal, who represents Norwich's Nelson Division, asked Graham Plant, Cabinet Member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, whether the council would now consider bringing them in. But Mr Plant said he feared creating permanent channels in terraced streets where drivers do not have dedicated parking places could cause conflict. He said, if you had a permanent cable, the issue is that people do not have the right to park outside their house to charge their car if their neighbour is parked there. I don't have a resolution to that yet, and neither does anybody else in the rest of the country. I've got terraced streets in Great Yarmouth which are a mile long and chock-a-block with parked cars. If I allow somebody with an EV to park outside their house because they're having an EV cable there, we're going to have issues and we're going to have people arguing. I don't think it's right that members should have to sort out that kind of issue in the street. Mr Plant said the council would stick with its current system of permitting people who pay £69 for an assessment to be allowed to run temporary cables to charge their vehicles. The council has also installed a number of charge points in streets around Norwich so people can power their vehicles. Mr Plant said, I don't want people across Norfolk arguing outside their houses about who is parking where.
Pedestrian has taken to hospital after being hit by a bus. It happened close to the High Street Junction in Church Lane, Galston, at around 2:25 p.m. on Bank Holiday Monday. The road was closed while emergency services attended the scene. The pedestrian, a man, was taken to James Paget Hospital with serious injuries. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Constabulary confirmed the road reopened at around 4 p.m.
A pub has raised over £60,000 for local good causes since 2010. The Dock Tavern in Galston raised more than £4,000 from last year's fundraising efforts alone. A cheque for £4,003.98 was given to Louise Bullen from the Well and Pantry, and Harry Goodwin, a volunteer rider for Norfolk Blood Bikes. This year's chosen charities to receive funding will be announced shortly.
A brand new mural has transformed a graffiti-plagued wall in the town into an eye-catching work of art. The new mural, featuring a swooping seagull with a chip in its mouth, ice cream and beach background, aims to celebrate the holiday-making heritage of Great Yarmouth. Represent Project teamed up with two artists from Norwich to create the mural on Temple Road, which also aims to help combat antisocial behaviour in the area. Reuben Clues, founder and CEO of the non-profit arts organisation, said, it is a place that really welcomes holiday makers and people that want to move and live here. We have lots of culture and diversity here, and we want to embrace that. It is vibrant and promotes the young people of Great Yarmouth. The artwork is the latest addition in the organisation's Street Gallery Walls series, which has seen murals created across Norfolk. The landlord of the property gave permission for the organisation to use the wall after it had been plagued by persistent vandalism. Artists Dominic Slugsy and Marlo Lex, wonderful names, produced the mural in the space of one weekend, with passers-by helping to spray paint parts of the piece. Members of the Great Yarmouth community helped conceive the idea of the mural, which is a nod to holidaymaker nostalgia and in the style of a postcard. Mr. Cruz added, graffiti is part of the culture in Great Yarmouth. We are against graffiti vandalism, but if you can't fight it, you need to embrace it. The house that was getting vandalised, and it is a response to that. The organisation hopes to bring renewed personality to the area and helps provide a brighter welcome for those visiting the town. He added, we want the community to feel that they own the wall first. We want to bring that idea back where holidaymakers can take a picture. For those arriving by bus and in taxi, they will feel welcome.
We're all going on a summer holiday. No more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on a summer holiday. No more worries for me or you. For a week or two. We're going where the sun shines brightly. We're going where the sea is blue. We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true. Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true. Sun shines brightly. We're going where the sea is blue. We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true. Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true. For me and you.
Cliff Richard there. Well, the rest of the news is coming shortly. But first, a reminder that last week's Grapevine follows after the end of this recording for our postal listeners only. Right, let's get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's news. So it's back to Julie and Margaret.
A woman died while paramedics filled in paperwork in the car park minutes after they had attended to her, an inquest has heard. A bitter dispute between a family and medics over whether Janet Noon should have been taken to hospital has dominated proceedings at Norfolk Coroner's Court this week. The 73-year-old died at Belvoir House care home in Rundle on February the 12th, 2025. Her death came just minutes after paramedics and a GP agreed that it was in her best interests to leave her there for monitoring rather than transfer her to hospital. Her sons, Jonathan and James Whedon, say that decision amounted to a catastrophic failure. But paramedics Francesca Cox and Philip Goff, along with GP Wendy Clark, have insisted no mistakes were made, maintaining the decision was clinically appropriate and centred on Mrs. Noon's comfort and well-being. Norfolk Coroner's Court heard Mrs. Noon, who had advanced Alzheimer's disease, was assessed on the morning of her death by Miss Cox and Mr. Goff after staff called 999 with concerns about her condition. However, following a phone consultation with Mrs. Noon's GP, Dr. Clark of Brundle Medical Partnership, a decision was made not to take her to hospital. In a call transcript read to the court, Dr. Clark told paramedics at the scene, "If she is not gasping and she appears well in herself, it seems sensible to keep an eye on her. Staff should monitor her SATs and observations every hour, and I will check her urine and assess her when I arrive." She said, "It's not the best option at the moment for this lady to be moved to hospital." Giving evidence via a video link, Dr. Clark said she stood by the decision. Yes, at that point in time I felt it was appropriate. And a best interest decision for Mrs. Noon, she added. She told the court her symptoms could reasonably have been explained by a urinary tract infection, and agreed that taking her to hospital risked causing unnecessary distress, given that she was becoming irritated. We take a holistic view, Dr. Clark said. If a patient is likely to become very distressed, being taken out of a familiar environment, we have to weigh up what is best for her comfort and safety. But within minutes of that decision, Mrs. Noon suffered a catastrophic collapse while the paramedics completed notes in the car park. Care home leader Syed Ahmed, who called the ambulance, told the court he had checked on her before the crew stepped outside. Moments later, an emergency alarm was raised by domestic staff clearing her room, who noticed her become suddenly pale and stop breathing. Mr. Ahmed ran out into the car park to call Miss Cox and Mr. Goff back inside. They returned to find Mrs. Noon in pre-cardiac arrest. She was pale, unresponsive, and not breathing, Miss Cox said. Although she briefly regained breathing after intervention, her condition rapidly deteriorated. Jonathan Whedon described the scene as horrible and distressing in a statement read to the court. She was gasping for breath, grabbing at the curtains, he said. I pleaded for them to do something so she would not suffer, but it felt like they were just watching her. Mrs. Noon died at 11:45 a.m., around 15 minutes after being reviewed. The inquest heard her sudden deterioration came as a shock to those treating her. That is a very dramatic change in presentation, Assistant Coroner Robin Wilde said. Miss Cox agreed that it was unexpected, estimating the decline had happened within around 15 to 20 minutes. Despite this, both paramedics maintained the original decision had been correct. We were doing our very best for Janet, Miss Cox said. Mr. Goff added that while Mrs. Noon was clearly unwell, her symptoms, including a rapid heart rate and low oxygen levels, were consistent with a number of conditions, including infection, which she had a history of. Both he and Dr. Clark told the court that even if a pulmonary embolism had to be suspected, diagnosed and treated, treatment would not have been available in the ambulance. The request also heard concerns raised by Mrs. Noon's family about her care in the days before her death. Care worker Louise Dane told the court that on Friday the 11th, Mrs. Noon had refused food, drink and medication and remained in bed throughout the day. However, this was not escalated to a doctor at the time and she had been eating the previous day. Her sons also raised concern that a broken lift at the home had stopped her being able to go downstairs and access outside in the days leading to her death. Mrs. Noon of Bluebell Way in Bradwell near Great Yarmouth had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in 2020 shortly after retiring. A former nurse at the James Paget Hospital, special constable and charity worker with the Matthew Project, she was described by her family as someone who gave so much and asked for so little. Her husband, Rick Noon, said the passing of Jan has left a void in many lives. Her only fault was that she would put herself last. The inquest continues.
Getaways to Norfolk's award-winning beaches are becoming more popular due to the rise of staycations. New data from Aways Europe, largest holiday homes business, has revealed that coastal locations in Norfolk, Cornwall and Devon saw a spike in demand in the lead-up to Easter. The company reported that next day bookings rose by a third compared to the same period last year. Stable weather across much of the UK during Easter, combined with ongoing cost of living pressures and challenging international conditions, contributed to the rise in domestic travel, otherwise known as staycations. Consumer confidence in overseas travel has been shaken by conflict in the Middle East, which led to around 17,000 affected bookings, according to travel agent lastminute.com. The Foreign Office currently advises against all but essential travel to several countries in that region. Matthew Price, chief executive of Amaze, said, "People do not stop prioritizing holidays in uncertain times. Instead, they look for an escape that feels effortless. It is also part of a more long-term shift in consuming behaviour as people increasingly value the flexibility and reassurance of UK breaks over the risk of unexpected disruptions abroad."
Paddlers are preparing to make a splash ahead of the opening of a new feature on the Norfolk Broads. The county's newest paddle launch site is set to open this weekend at Stalham Staithe after a new floating pontoon was installed. This allows for safe entrance and exit out of the River Ant for those in kayaks, canoes or paddleboards, while putting the town on the map for paddle sport. Stalham Mayor Kevin Bayes, himself a keen kayaker, came up with the idea last year in an effort to make it safer for people to take part in sports on the Broads. He said, "It's a beautiful part of the Norfolk Broads, and this is something that can be used all year round. We will not charge for people to use a facility, which is also the great thing about it." Darren Reeve, a paddle sport coach, has been working on this project with Stalham Town Council and Mr. Bayes. "It's been lovely to be a part of it and working together with the town council," he said. Mr. Reeve started a group online called Norfolk Paddle Meetup in 2020, which he said has become like a family, while working alongside the Broads Authority and Paddle UK. He added, "It's brought the experienced paddlers together with the beginners." He hopes the new feature will bring many more paddlers to the area to use local shops and tourist attractions during their visit. The pontoon site does not offer any boards or kayaks to hire, but it is rather designed for those who already have the equipment. The official opening is on Saturday, April the 11th, next to the Museum of the Broads. There will be parking available on the site for £5.
A healthcare worker who took on a wide variety of roles has retired after almost 50 years working in Norfolk hospitals. Robbie Woods has pulled down the curtain on his career, which saw him fulfil a diverse array of jobs at various Norfolk hospitals. He spent two significant periods working at the James Paget Hospital in Galston and has now called time on his latest 14-year spell there. Mr. Woods, 70, said, "I always looked back on my early days at the Paget with the fondest of memories. When I came back, I was not surprised to find that same warm, friendly and caring atmosphere still prevailed. I have loved my time working at the James Paget and have met so many lovely people there." Mr. Woods began his career as a chef at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital preparing meals for patients. He then took his culinary skills to the Northgate Hospital in Great Yarmouth a couple of years later before joining the team at the Paget. At the Paget, he worked in the hospital's brand new kitchens before the hospital had even welcomed its first patients. After the hospital opened in July 1982, the catering team not only had to develop menus, but also the logistics behind delivering hundreds of meals to patients at mealtimes. He left the Paget after 10 years to pursue a career in management, working as catering manager and hotel services manager at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn. He then became a director of medicine and director of surgery in the King's Lynn before being lured back to the Paget as a senior project manager in this transformation team. In his 14 years in the role, he has been involved in several projects, including the development of the Trust's New Day Case Theatres complex and helping introduce text messages service for patients. He now plans to ease into his retirement gently and take some time to consider his next adventure. He added, "It's not in my nature to sit around. I always need a new challenge."
Council leaders have launched an attack on a Norfolk MP after claiming his DIY pothole reporting repair scheme is clogging up the system and slowing down repairs. Kay Mason-Billig, the Conservative leader of Norfolk County Council, has accused Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe of personal self-aggrandisement for setting up the service. She claimed his controversial scheme has left officers spending hours on duplicate complaints. Mr. Lowe launched the service in January, urging constituents to bypass the council and report potholes directly to him via his website. He said he would then take up their pothole problems with County Hall and would chase them until they were fixed. But at a meeting of the Cabinet on Tuesday, senior councils said the programme had been a spanner in the works. Graham Plant, the Cabinet member for Highways, revealed that the council officers had been forced to spend more time than 40 additional hours chasing up vague complaints made via Mr. Lowe's office. "We have a certain MP who has taken on himself to have members of the public report to him potholes and defects in the roads, which then go to our team," he said. "Our officers have spent an extra 40 hours plus going back to the residents to ask them exactly where the pothole is and where the defect is," he said. "It's now taking more time to repair defects in the Yarmouth area because they're being double-handled. The easiest way to report it is to report on what has always been in the Norfolk County Council's Highways Pothole Reporting Scheme, where you put in the exact place it is and our team will deal with it usually within 3 days. Mrs. Mason-Billig added, "It's very frustrating for us here, when we've got a good system in place, to see someone throw a spanner in the works for their own personal aggrandisement, when they're actually not helping anybody. And they're certainly costing taxpayers money." She added that even when the MP had been told face-to-face that his scheme was hindering the council's work, he'd refused to listen. "They think their system is better," she said. However, Mr. Lowe has hit back, branding the pair's claims as pathetic nonsense and arguing that the scheme has had huge success since its introduction. "Dozens and dozens of local residents across the Great Yarmouth constituency have come forward with potholes, and they've had huge success in resolving many of the issues," he said. The outspoken MP, who quit Reform UK last year following a bitter falling out with party leader Nigel Farage, also took a swipe at the council's track record. "It's not my fault the council have done such a crap job sorting out potholes and generally messing up the road system locally," he said. "Yes, our system is doing things differently. I make no apologies for that. It's getting results. I'm not interested in this boring political point scoring before an election. I'm entirely focusing on delivering for the residents." The clash comes at a particularly tense moment in Norfolk politics, with county council elections just a month away, and pollsters predicting the Conservatives may face a wipeout at County Hall. Mr. Lowe is standing several Restore Britain candidates, putting them on a collision course with both the Tories, who run the council, and his former allies in Reform UK. During his visit to the county last week, Mr Farage himself waded into the pothole row, claiming that there were 6 potholes for every mile of road in Norfolk. Mrs Mason Billing dismissed that as an untruth and insisted that the council was performing in the top tier nationally on repairs. The council has also pointed to figures showing that it repaired 6,515 potholes in the past year and boasts the lowest number of road defects of any of 40 surrounding counties.
Spills in worst-hit sewage hotspots in North Norfolk have dropped by 95%. It has emerged. New data has revealed that sewage spills in West Runton and Knackerswood in the heart of the Broads dramatically dropped in 2025. In West Runton, the number of hours of spillages dropped by 94% from 116 in 2024 to just 7 in 2025. And at Knackerswood, where the sewage works empty into the River Ant between Howe Hill and Ludham Bridge, the spillage hours dropped by 95% from 4,359 in 2024 to 204 in 2025.
Well, that's all the news for this week, so welcome to Grapevine Extra. This week, Margaret is getting on her bike, and Julie looks at how bringing up the children has changed since the last century.
Easter and springtime. But while we often think of the two going together, lambs, daffodils, Easter eggs, while we know when Easter is due to fall, spring is not so predictable, and sometimes it seems to burst upon us suddenly. But I suppose more often it's gradual and seems to creep up on us. The early mornings may still be dark and very chilly, especially before the clocks go forward, and the evenings seem to be closing in early, especially if the weather has not been too good. But then you become aware of more birdsong. It's as if nature is starting to reawaken. Also, if the sun manages to break through on an otherwise cloudy day, you suddenly realise that there is a little bit of real warmth on your face, a bit of power in the sun, as they say. And the first snowdrops, what a joy. It always seemed to be springtime when I was taken out into the country on the crossbar of my dad's rickety old bike. Sitting on a cushion, with my feet on a piece of wood tied to one of the down bars. Like all children, I took it all very much for granted. But also, as children do, I soaked up all the experiences like a sponge. Dad had been a keen walker and cyclist in his time, not here in Norfolk, but in his native Buckinghamshire, and only when he had been on leave from the Navy. And on quite a few occasions, doing a bit of poaching, sometimes accompanied apparently by my older sister. But though he would never admit it, I suspect that as he was just a bit older, at the time when I came on the scene, he found cycling on our flatter Norfolk terrain quite a relief after the hills of his native home county. Anyway, it was my weighty responsibility to do the gear change whenever we came to an incline, and heaven help me if I slipped the bike into top by accident. Oh dear. However, the fields and lanes were beautiful and motor traffic almost non-existent, just after World War II. I learnt the names of the wildflowers. I knew where the spring lambs could be found and where the lakes were, often hiding behind trees. Those lakes had a mysterious, forbidden feel when I was tiny, and I could never understand why I could paddle in the sea, try to swim in the pool, but never go near to those wonderful lakes. And another great thrill was to stop at the level crossing gates while a steam train thundered through. Then it was on and over the bridge to where the wide flat marshes began. I don't think we ever actually ventured any further afield than that. But on one lovely May day, as Dad later told me, he turned off the country road and followed a track which led down to the river. And I don't know if there were any houses nearby, and if there were, there was certainly no people about. So we picked up speed, a real turn of speed, and it was downhill all the way. Suddenly, to Dad's horror, we ran into a swarm of huge hornets, and he couldn't stop. And we had to go straight through them, with him, his hand in front of my face to shield my eyes. And apparently I was not in the least bit bothered by this, and I just thought they were big bees. And of course, that beautiful spring day belonged to them, as well as to us, as Dad later explained to me. We had intruded on their home, territory. But came the time when riding on crossbars was very in for a dig. And those days were way behind me. But now I had a bike of my own, and our country jaunts continued. So on another spring day, we cycled through a farmyard and continued down a bumpy track to a beautiful little church that Dad loved, in a very peaceful surrounding. And after a chat with the dear friendly vicar who happened to be around, and after I'd been allowed to play the harmonium, we ventured a little bit further and came to an area of woodland. Dad declared that it reminded him of his native Buckinghamshire. And so we went west, surrounded by bright green leaves and the lovely fresh smells of the woodland. We came upon a clearing where the gamekeeper was rearing pheasants and where dozens of fluffy baby chicks were running about. And they had no fear. They were coming right up to us. I was completely enchanted, but noticed that Dad had gone rather quiet. It turned out that he was grieved at the thought that these little semi-tame little things were being reared just to be beaten out of the bushes and towards the awaiting guns. I was grieved as well when all this was explained to me. But there were many happy times, and they continued during the holidays after I left to go to college. And by that time, Dad's health problems meant that he had to give up the bike, although he still enjoyed country walks and rides around, to all the favourite places when I got my first car. Anybody remember the dear old Ford Anglias?
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky, got the sun in my eyes, and I won't be surprised if it's a dream. Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for me. Clear, it's because you are here. You're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen.
I'm on the top of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
something in the wind has learned my name, and it's telling me that things are not the same. In the leaves on the trees and the touch of the breeze, there's a pleasing sense of happiness for me. There is only one wish on my mind. When this day is through, I hope that I will find that tomorrow will be just the same for you and me. All I need will be mine if you are here. I'm on the top of the world again, down on creation, and the only explanation I can. Since you've been around, your love's put me at the top of the world. I'm on the top of the world again, down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
So, psychology says children who grew up in the 1960s and 70s have developed a specific resilience that's nearly impossible to teach today. It came from being unsupervised, unpraised, and expected to figure things out alone, and that combination built a tolerance for discomfort that no parenting book can replicate. My neighbour's kid recently had a meltdown because the Wi-Fi went down for 20 minutes. Meanwhile, I remember spending entire summers without knowing what my friends were doing unless I biked over to their house. The contrast got me thinking about something deeper than just technology. Growing up as one of five kids in Ohio, this is obviously an American talking here, we didn't have helicopter parents or participation trophies. We had house keys on shoelaces and a general understanding that if we weren't bleeding profusely, we'd figure it out ourselves. And somehow that approach built something in us that modern parenting, despite all its good intentions, struggles to recreate. Remember when being bored wasn't considered a crisis? Ava, a content writer who studied this phenomenon, puts in perfectly, in the 1960s and 70s, free play wasn't an extracurricular activity, it was the default. We'd disappear after breakfast and show up for dinner, covered in dirt, and occasionally sport a new scrape. No GPs tracking, no scheduled play dates, just kids figuring out how to entertain themselves and solve their own problems. This wasn't neglect, it was different psychology entirely. Our parents trusted us, navigate the world, make mistakes, and learn from them without constant supervision. They were there when we really needed them, but they didn't hover. The data backs this up too. In 1971, 80% of third graders walked to school alone. By 1990, that number had plummeted to 9%. Today, it's practically extinct. My father worked double shifts at the factory, and when he came home exhausted, the last thing on his mind was telling us we were special or tying our shoelaces. Achievement meant something, because acknowledgement was rare. You know what this created? Kids who didn't need constant validation to feel okay about themselves. A psychologist who researches grit and perseverance found that endurance grows when people learn they can survive discomfort. We learned that early. Not getting praised for every little thing taught us that our worth wasn't tied to constant external approval. Think about it. When you grow up sharing a bedroom with two brothers like I did, you quickly learn that the world doesn't revolve around your feelings. You develop what psychologists called problem-focused coping. the impulse to address difficulties directly instead of collapsing into helplessness. It's something that might sound strange to modern ears. We were comfortable being uncomfortable. No air conditioning in the car during summer road trips. We survived. Had to wait 3 hours at the doctor's office with nothing but a 2-year-old magazine. We managed. Ava captures this perfectly. They learned that being uncomfortable wasn't an emergency requiring immediate attention. This built something crucial, distress tolerance. Research published in medical journals shows that risky, unstructured play helps children develop emotional regulation. We climbed trees, though we might fall. We rode bikes, like Margaret, without helmets, not recommending that now, but stay with me. We learned that minor injuries and that fear is often worse than reality. Stuck with homework? Figure it out. Can't reach something on the high shelf? Find a chair. Having a disagreement with your friend? Work it out through yourselves. Our parents weren't being cruel. They were teaching us self-reliance without calling it that. They had their own problems to solve, and frankly, solving ours for us wasn't on their priority list. Peter Gray, a psychologist who studies childhood development, has written that when children manage their own time, they naturally learn to tolerate frustration. We have plenty of practice at that. I remember getting stuck trying to fix my bike chain when I was young. Nobody rushed to help me. After an hour of grease-covered frustration, I figured it out. That small victory taught me more than persistence than any motivational poster could ever do. Want to watch your favourite movie show? Better be home when it's aired, because there was no streaming, no recording, no second chances. They developed the understanding that good things take time, that anticipation has value, and that immediate gratification isn't always the goal. We saved up for months to buy something we wanted. We waited in actual lines without smartphones to distract us. We learned what wanting something and not immediately getting it wouldn't kill us. Research published reveals something interesting. Too many choices actually increase stress and impatience, especially in children. We had fewer choices with paradoxicality, made us more patient and content with what we had. In my family, with 5 kids and a factory worker's salary, creativity wasn't optional. Broken toy? Fix it. Or find a new way to play with it. Hand-me-downs made them work. They learned that not every inconvenience requires an upgrade. Not every problem requires a purchase. This wasn't deprivation. It was education and resourcefulness. When you can't buy your way out of problems, you develop actual problem-solving skills. You learn to see possibilities where others see limitations. Mm. What do you reckon, Margaret?
Oh, I think that's excellent.
There we are.
Every night I sit here by my window, staring at Lonely Avenue. Watching lovers holding hands and laughing, and thinking about the things we used to do.
Thinking of things
like a walk in the park,
things
like a kiss in the dark,
things
like a sailboat ride,
yeah.
What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do. Memories are all I have to cling to.
Cling to.
And heartaches are the friends I'm talking to.
Talking to.
When I'm not thinking of just how much I loved you.
Love you.
But I'm thinking about the things we used to do.
Thinking of things.
Like a walk in the park. Like a kiss in the dark, like a sailboat ride. What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now.
thinking about the things we used to do. I still can hear the jukebox softly playing, and the face I see each day belongs to you. Though there's not a single sound and there's nobody else around, well, it's just me thinking of the things we used to do.
Thinking of things
like a walk in the park,
things
like a kiss in the dark,
things
like a sailboat ride,
yeah, yeah.
What about the night we cried? Things like a lover's vow, things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do, and the heartaches of the friends I'm talking to. You got me thinking about the things we used to do.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be the other Margaret and Andrew. So, we look forward to your company for that. But, in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe and well, and from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.